Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 298 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her complex trauma. Uh-huh. And if all of you out there are saying, oh, no, I don't do trauma. Oh, yes, you do. And when I'm done with you over the course of this next episode, you're going to be so informed and so enlightened, you're going to say, oh my gosh, I got some homework to do. All right, before we begin this terrific show, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. You know why? Because I love hearing from you. That's why. Your feedback is amazing and helps me redefine what this whole show is about. Always loving to hear from you. So make sure to do that. All right. It's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
So I am beyond thrilled to have one of my dearest friend colleagues on the show today to talk about something that I think is impossibly important for you. And you know me out there in the Her podcast land. I talk about resilience all the time. I talk about stress as well. But you know, I'm going to be talking about some really surprising, eye-opening statistics and information you probably don't even know about, you're not aware of. And I can't think of a better person to be able to do this than someone who is world-renowned in her work as a psychologist in complex trauma. So this is Dr. Christine Courtois. She is a psychologist and specializes in the treatment of trauma, particularly for adults experiencing the effects of childhood incest and other forms of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. Dr. Courtois has worked with these issues for over 30 years and has developed treatment approaches for complex post-traumatic and dissociative conditions for which she has received international acclaim and recognition. And what I love about Chris is that she offers an integrative and evidence-based treatment for clients and for people who work with the clients, loved ones, people who are trying to wrap their heads around what happened to someone that they love so much. I happen to have met Chris when we teamed up in the wonderful world of addiction and how to make treatment for people who are affected by addiction more trauma-based, which, surprising to me, it was not. All right. So Chris is also an author, a wonderful writer. She, of course, wrote the seminal textbook, Treating Complex Traumatic Stress Disorders in Adults. And this is just basically what I consider the Bible. She's also written, It's Not You, It's What Happened to You, which I have referred to so many people. So it's the best. Chris, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Well, I'm delighted to join you. It's taken a long time for us to be able to schedule this.
I know. Well, you know, little Miss Busy here, you know, come on now. And everybody wants a piece of Dr. Chris Courtois. I mean, that's just the way it is and the way of the world. So, Chris, I just couldn't wait for this podcast. It was so important. What I'd like you to do is blow some people's minds out there. A lot of people sit back and go, oh, trauma. Oh, complex trauma. No. No, that's like a building falling on your head. And that kind of trauma. When they don't realize that what are you calling complex trauma?
Well, complex trauma, what you just described about something falling on your head, is a physical trauma. And it's also something that's called impersonal trauma, because you weren't standing there waiting and planning for something to fall on your head. What we're talking about with complex trauma is interpersonal trauma, which is something that is done to someone, usually by way of exploitation or by way of assault or interpersonal violence. And it also, one of the things that makes it really difficult, it's intentional. And in many cases, it's inescapable and or hard to escape. And so it occurs over and over again, often over long periods of time, and it can become chronic. Now, the other thing that's part of complex trauma is what we call developmental trauma. And that is when a child's attachment to the parent, a parent, is not a secure attachment, meaning the parent may have some kind of problem, such as depression or an addiction or themselves having difficulty with their own trauma history, or not being able to be responsive or parent in a way that is helpful to the child. And when that happens, it leaves the child quite exposed to victimization and vulnerability to victimization by other people. So it's I like to say that it's a very complex consideration of a lot of things. And what happens is the effects, especially when we're talking about developmental trauma, and unfortunately the repetitive trauma that I just mentioned is often what happens in child abuse and in cases of family abuse where a child just can't get up and leave, it just continues to happen. And so a child, or if it happens in adulthood and it happens often enough, they have to defend themselves in some way because they're having reactions, but the situation continues. Even if it's happening just only occasionally, what happens is a child gets very acclimated and is in anticipation and in fear that it could happen again. So even though it may not be there physically, it will be there emotionally and will be there in their bodies because their body registers the reaction to having been put under that kind of stress and what we call traumatic stress. So that's a very broad-based understanding or explanation, but I hope it gives you a sense of, you know, what we're talking about when we say complex.
All right. Well, I think that the first mind blower out there for all my wonderful people in the Herb podcast land is the following. Number one, a building does not have to fall on your head to be a complex trauma. Quite frankly, it could be pretty horrific emotional neglect, emotional verbal abuse. And it's also not a one-time thing. It's ongoing oftentimes. And it occurs during very, very precious time in your life, during childhood and adolescence. Why is that so important to know that it's during childhood and adolescence that it really makes a difference here, Chris?
Because in order to develop in healthy ways, and I want to say that healthy, and by that I mean normal healthy ways, but I don't want to imply that survivors are abnormal, but they've had experiences that have derailed their healthy or more normal modes of development, and they've had to defend themselves. And children, as we know, are particularly vulnerable because they're developing. Their mind's developing, their body's developing, their values, their sense of self. And so trauma that occurs over the course of childhood and over the course of adolescence can really mess up the works, so to speak. It can derail the person's development in a way that makes, future life very difficult. And this brings in the adverse childhood experiences studies that have been undertaken where there was an assessment from Kaiser Permanente of some of their registrants, as they do every year. And one year they deliberately added questions about childhood adversity to find out whether these adversities were correlated with later mental health and health problems. And they were not ready for the responses that they got, because the basic algorithm is the more adverse childhood experiences you have of the sort that you just mentioned, Pam, the more likelihood you have of having adverse impact, both psychologically, psychosocially, also developmentally, and also it can lead to health risk behaviors and an early death. And it's sort of in, put in a pyramid, and if you want to read more about that, you can go online to ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, .com, and there's considerable information. Now, I want to caution us in this discussion, because we don't want to say that everybody that has had these things has always had a negative impact. There are all kinds of mediators and moderators that can happen, and one of those moderators, a profound one, is if a child has a sustaining healthy relationship with an adult, or has natural resilience or ways of coping that allow them to know what's happening but to cope with it or to defend against it, then the outcome may not be as serious for them. But one of the takeaway messages from today's webcast is that reactions are very... We can talk about broad after effects, and I'll be happy to talk about that. But we also have to know that every individual has unique experiences and are unique in their own way, and so the responses are going to be highly individualized. And if you go to therapy for these effects, and I hope you do if they're, you know, causing you a lot of difficulties, you really need to have a therapist who's aware of these issues, but also who's willing to be flexible in working with you and works very hard with you to understand you and the impact on you as you set treatment goals.
Yeah, I just think that that's very important, too. And that is, as we're talking about all of this, just know that there's help out there. And I think you would agree also that in the best of all worlds, you're getting a therapist who's trained in trauma, right?
Absolutely. And thank you for saying that, Pam, because just like you and I discovered with addiction services when we were working together, many therapists and many addiction therapists and addictionologists don't have a clue about trauma. And I've been writing about this for a good 20 or 25 years now. It's a travesty. Our professional training programs still do not include information about traumatization as a common human experience that can really impact development and the whole trajectory of an individual's life. So often somebody will go in for symptoms that they don't associate with a past trauma. And if their therapist is unaware of the possible connection and doesn't look for it, then it doesn't get discovered. And it may result in a wild goose chase that doesn't, it may be helpful, but it's not really working at finding the cause. And I'm being optimistic when I say helpful, because we know in some cases that psychotherapy and psychotherapists actually have made survivors' lives worse when they don't understand, or worse than that, when they stigmatize the client for their symptoms, or if they don't understand how to put them in perspective, or they misuse the client in some way. So it's this really a huge ethical issue that we're trying to attend to get more training in professional curriculum, but also in the general information to the public. You know, the public these days, it's sort of ironic, because we know about PTSD, but we know about it largely in terms of war trauma. And it's good that we know about PTSD, but what happens is many people assume that every warrior that goes into combat is going to come out with PTSD. And that's not true, just like it is not true in the sense of what I just said about complex trauma, that not everybody's going to have the same outcome. So we can't assume, but we need to ask, and we need to know to ask. And many therapists have not had any training to know how to do that. In fact, they may be freaked out. They may not know what to do and do exactly the wrong thing. So one of the things you want to do is make sure that your therapist has had some education and has information under their belt about how to work with trauma.
Oh, I love it. And
another long answer.
Well, no, seriously. I just think it's so important for people out there to know. These are things most women, let alone people in general, are very uninformed about. They don't know.
Uh-huh.
You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And we're trying to say that,
right.
You know, it's very, very common. Now, check this out. You know, there's the famous Harvard nurses study. And one of the things that was fascinating from a study that came out of this, they have a million, you know, publications from the study, was that 1 in 9 women will have PTSD at some time during her lifetime, twice the rate of men. 1 in 9 women, okay? And then I was looking at it because of what it did to the incidence of diabetes, and it's type 2 diabetes. And it turns out that PTSD in a woman doubles the risk of type 2 diabetes, and that goes hand in hand with obesity. It's like all of these things, it's like a domino effect.
Right. And I wanted to mention, I'm glad you mentioned that, Pam, in terms of physical health, because I was just talking about mental health practitioners. They haven't had training, but nor have medical practitioners. So it's not uncommon for clients to go into doctors, and actually medical doctors are often the first portal, the first place that survivors go to get help with their physical concerns. But again, if the practitioner has had no training, they don't have any understanding of how these things might be connected. And you might be sitting there in the audience scratching your head, how are these things connected? But what's been learned is the whole physiological system and psychophysiological system of the individual may be changed by having been under chronic stress. And so that means, like, in terms of diabetes, the endocrine system has been changed. We also know that these individuals are prone to have a lot of autoimmune disorders. And, you know, the mysterious woman's disorders of fibromyalgia and chronic pain. So it's helpful to have doctors who are aware of these issues and how they might contribute to a medical illness. And that that linkage that Pam is mentioning is being made over and over and over again. And I'm so grateful for it. I started, I wrote my first book back in 1988, which tells you how old I am.
Young.
I was fascinated because there were all of these case studies in the literature about, and at the time I was studying incestuous abuse and doing interviews of women who had had the experience and the unfortunate experience. And as I looked at the literature, there were all these case studies of you know, incest was related to irritable bowel syndrome, and here's one case, and here's two cases of psychogenic seizures. It was all over the literature, but it was scattershot. And now that's been pulled together, and we have a much better sense of how these things develop over time, and also how they can impact over time, but also how they can leave the individual very vulnerable to more misfortune in their life, and unfortunately more victimization.
Yep, I completely agree.
Including by professionals.
I know, seriously, go figure, right? Well, you know,
yep.
All right, so here's your next mind blower. This is, I'm going to read directly from from the Bessel van der Kolk's afterword chapter in your wonderful book on treating complex traumatic stress disorders. And Bessel is a very, very, very well-known expert in all things stress and trauma. He actually wrote a book as well called The Body Keeps the Score, and he's very famous for actually utilizing yoga, but a very interesting form of yoga. It's trauma-informed yoga, because as you know, in most yoga classes, you know, instructors walking around and they'll just walk right up to you and just start mangling your body, going, no, you're supposed to do it this and do that. And God knows I've had that. And what if you're a trauma survivor? You know, and you had physical trauma, sexual trauma. You can't just, you know, walk up to someone like that and expect them not to be triggered. And so he figured that out along with a whole bunch of other people, and you know, he's been using that. But in his chapter, there was something that really grabbed me, and here it is. I'll read it. Child abuse and neglect are tragically common. Now, again, I'm going to, you know, just say to you a little sidebar here. Child abuse can be verbal abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, abandonment, you know, a lack of attachment, all of those things. I haven't even gotten to physical or sexual or whatever else, okay? You could just have the first part of this and you're already in trouble. So please remember that it actually spans a spectrum of manifestations. All right, so child abuse and neglect are tragically common. Despite the fact that research has repeatedly demonstrated that human beings who are exposed to betrayal, abandonment, and abuse by their caretakers suffer from vastly more complex psychobiological disturbances than human beings who are victims of earthquakes and motor vehicle accidents. I mean, just amazing. And then yet, he also says, like you do, our diagnostic system continues to lump all trauma-related symptomatology under the category of post-traumatic stress disorder. It's thrown it all together, just like it's all the same thing. So you're in a, you know, you were in a motor vehicle accident. Same thing as if you had 15 years of child abuse. Okay, what? That makes no sense. Doesn't that just sing to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, seriously.
That was my cat in the background.
Oh, that's okay.
You know, agreed with us.
Well, in about 5 seconds, you'll probably hear my German shepherds agree as well.
Okay.
But, you know,
okay.
But seriously, he's, you know, Bessel is saying the same thing you are. Now, you said a phrase that I really want to kind of, I want you to run with. You said, well, of course there are those who have natural resilience. What the hell is that?
Well, again, that's very variable, but some of us are very hardy souls, and some of us are more on the shrinking violet end, and each can have their own way of being resilient, but we need to understand that there are different temperaments and different traits that we all have. And when I talk to survivors, I'm often impressed by the ways that they used to try to evade or deal with or manage what was happening to them. And actually, that I learned that early in my dissertation research, which was on this group of women who had been incested, about what they did to take care of themselves, fight back, or engage in a way that created the least amount of harm to themselves, what they did to take care of other members of their family to keep them from being abused. It was quite amazing. So resilience can be a very, very broad-based term. And sometimes, you know, the things that people do to survive and be resilient, they might later blame themselves for, well, if I'd only done this, I'd only done that. And part of our job is to help people to understand that they often did things that were, they may not have been effective in the moment, but they were resilient, and they indicated that they were trying to put a block in or a stop in or limit the damage or whatever it happened to be. So it's a very broad term, but it's very useful. And when we do an assessment, an initial assessment, it's critical to really look for, how did you get through? You know, how do you view yourself? Do you see yourself as a strong person? So all of those beliefs about oneself and finding out how people got through, those are all as important as finding out what happened to them. It's another dimension of it. And we want to build on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, take it personally if they don't get this right. You know what I mean? So they'll say, well, what was wrong with me that, you know, that I couldn't be like Susie Q over here who had just his nightmare, or for that matter, or my brother or sister? You know, how come they kind of, you know, whiz through and I'm the one who ends up with all this mental health stuff, and I'm obese and diabetic and whatever else.
Exactly. When in fact there may have been a lot of attempts, and resilience is not always, as I said, related to having necessarily a positive outcome, but we really want to look at the strength that takes and the coping ability and build on that. And really turn it around if it's seen as a negative thing, to really turn it around and say, hey, you tried to do something. You know, do you realize that you protected your siblings, for example? I actually had a woman who was incested by her stepfather, and when I asked her what effect it had on her and what she had done, she said, there were times when I allowed him, and those were her words, I allowed him to touch me because he would give us lunch money afterwards and we'd be able to have lunch. Otherwise, my siblings and I would be hungry for the rest of the day. Now, what a sick system that she has to do that. And she can later blame herself. Oh, I approached him. But you have to look at the whole context. That was actually something that was resilient and caretaking of the others in her family, yet we also have to look at how sick that system was that she was working against. And another thing, Pam, that I'd like to add is that perpetrators, now we're talking about different types of experiences. Neglect has been neglected, not lack of attention, lack of giving a child adequate attention has been found to be really very serious. So abandonment and neglect and loss in childhood. But when we talk about perpetrators of physical and sexual abuse in particular, one of the things they're really good at is shifting the blame. And they will blame the victim no matter what they do or don't do. They will put them in what's called a double bind. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And on top of that, they blame them. You know, you were so appealing and attractive as a three-year-old child. I couldn't help myself. Well, it puts it back on the child, and that is extremely unfair. It's also, they might also use the relationship they have with the child to entice the child, and that's called grooming. And as part of that also, the child gets all caught up in, what the perpetrator tells them. And this is the immaturity. Children don't know how to understand what an adult is doing. And so they may take it all on themselves. Also, in the interest of making the adult, and especially a parent, the good guy, even though they're doing bad. And the way kids do that is they flip it. I must have been a bad kid. I deserve this. Or the perpetrator told me it was all my fault and I deserved it. So there's a very big mind game that goes on in a lot of these abuses also.
And so here's something that I'm trying to figure out, right? So When you're a child and you have all this going on, you have this adversity, you have challenges, you're trying to fight back, you're trying to understand, but mind you, you know, clearly everyone out there knows that the frontal cortex, which is your brain CEO, isn't even fully developed till you're 25. So there you are at the age of 10 or, you know, whatever. And so here's the challenge, okay? The challenge is that, you know, you start out with all of this burden on you, and you also have physiologic and mental health challenges, which include things like the inability to self-regulate well. And so it's difficult then to take those next steps to find resilience. So as a psychologist who's working with someone who has signs of that lack of self-regulation, which you're going to define, how then do you help them put their head around that so they can even get to something like resilience? So let's go to self-regulation for a minute.
Okay. What often happens in abuse and neglect in particular, and attachment, early attachment disturbances, is a child is not taught to manage, to identify and manage their emotions. So there's nobody kissing the boo-boo. There's nobody paying attention to them and saying, you know, you're sad now, it'll be okay, you know, or giving them responses and advice that would be helpful in a circumstance, and naming what it is that they're feeling, and then also supporting them. What's been found to be just majorly important, and I talked a moment ago about the relationship with an adult who's positive and non-abusive, is support and explanation are critical. They are buffers. An inoculation against traumatization. Well, again, there's often a far cry between someone who's able to appropriately parent and help somebody regulate their emotions and someone who cannot do that. So when children don't get that, they're left to their own devices to manage their own feelings and their own behavior. And unfortunately, by the time they reach latency or into adolescence, they may have already been diagnosed as having something called conduct disorder, explosive tempers, and more often in girls, dissociative disorder, where they're spacey, and the explanation for many of those responses is that they've not been taught to regulate, so they've adapted methods, whether they're behaviorally or, you know, outward behavior or inward behavior, to allow them to cope and defend themselves. We also know that the body under stress, and this gets back to Dr. Vanderkolk's position, the body under stress that gets traumatized is a changed body. And what happens is it takes much less to set off a big response. So if you've got a traumatized body and no one comforting you, no one taking care of you, no one noticing, you start to have these big physiological responses, then you start to get very emotionally regulated. And those responses can go from what's called hyperarousal, feeling very energized and having conduct disturbances and relational problems and problem behaviors on one hand, if it gets bad enough, it will often flip into just the opposite, where the other side of the post-traumatic response is to get numbed, to get dissociated, to shut down, to get depressed. And either one of those is a very uncomfortable position and difficult to manage. So one of the primary things that we've learned to do in treatment early on is to help individuals to begin to name, to begin to identify and name their emotions, and then to begin to have mechanisms to be able to manage their emotions differently, including being able to bring them down a little bit when they're overwhelming, and being able to bring them up when they put somebody into a very depressed and very numbed out state. And that's called getting them into what has been termed the window of tolerance, so that they're not having too much or too little of emotional response, and they can manage and cope better.
I love it. I love it. And this is why, you know, when I'm really looking at this issue of self-regulation, I'm thinking of everything from, well, isn't addiction sort of part of that?
Oh, absolutely. Because addiction and all kinds of substances, you're an eating disorder, an eating specialist, all kinds of behaviors, including, paradoxically, self-injury, self-harm, risk-taking, and actual suicidality, may all be driven by trying to manage emotional overload or underload, or trying to manage emotional or psychological pain. And sometimes that's manifested physically, as we've talked about already. But, you know, I like to refer to addictions as chemical dissociation. And, you know, it works for as long as it works, and then it becomes a problem. And at that point, you know, you've got two problems instead of one problem. But those of us who are treating these conditions really need to understand that these are mechanisms that were put in place by people who are desperate to manage what they're feeling, but they may not know they're desperate. And again, they may need somebody from the outside who can help them put the pieces of the puzzle together, because it may not be clear to them. And Pam, another thing that I'd like to mention is there's something called delayed expression PTSD and complex trauma. And that is that many individuals who have been traumatized as children, as part of their resilience, we often hear they get out of the house early. Earlier than their peers who were not abused, with good reason, and that's very resilient for them to get out, but they may not have the resources to cope, or they may not have the wherewithal, or they may work really hard and they manage to get the wherewithal. As they're maybe going to college or going to trade school and establishing their career or their work history, establishing relationships and families, there may not be a lot of bandwidth to know about their past. But what typically happens is if they start to get into what I call snags or run up against triggers in their adult life, they may be highly susceptible to a return, and it's sort of a mysterious return of PTSD symptoms. And that's called delayed expression. And the bulk of my clients fit that circumstance. And what's so disconcerting is all of a sudden they're not the same as they were, because they've run across some kind of trigger that has set off something they don't even know about. And then they start behaving in ways that, like, their families will say, you know, well, you're really crazy. And they'll come into therapy saying, I'm really crazy. And once we start to look at what happened and what might have triggered their reaction, they're not crazy. What happened is a set of circumstances came together and set them off. And it can be very positive circumstances, which makes it even worse. For example, the birth of a child. Okay, that's a very, usually a very happy occasion. But for some survivors, the birth, for example, of a female child may cause them to fear that their daughter will go through what they went through, and they may start having all kinds of reactions at that point to having had a daughter. And it makes no sense if you don't know that those things go together. So another thing that happens with therapy is really trying to put the picture together in a way that makes it something that's understandable to the individual, but also to family members, because I've worked with more family members than I can tell, than I can say, who sit there and scratch their head and say, but this wasn't the way she was a year ago. or that's not the way he was. And this is not exclusive to women by any means. I've had men who have been extremely successful in their work lives and their family lives, had a setback at work or were humiliated at work in one case, and that was all it took. It just unraveled everything, and they became highly symptomatic. So we need to learn much more about that as well.
All right. And, you know, I think when you put it all together, you know, you're really looking at, number one, a reality check that not, you know, everyone can be exposed to the same trauma. And you will have, if you have 20 people with the same trauma, you may have 20 different takes on that trauma. You know, it is what it is. And for all the reasons that you've already, you know, articulated so well. So everyone out there, keep that in mind. You know, don't be slopping everyone into the same little rabbit hole of responses to trauma. It doesn't work that way. Everyone is utterly, absolutely unique, just unbelievably unique. And so there you have it. You know, it's so funny. I can remember like it was almost yesterday when I was talking to a woman, one of my patients once, and she was 53 years old. And, you know, I asked her about her childhood and this and that. Of course, in her lack of self-regulation, she became obese. And she was trying to understand why nothing worked. That's why I was here. Nothing worked. And I said, okay, and take me back a little bit. I always, always include childhood, adolescence, and early adulthood. Got to understand what the picture was like. And she said, there it was. She says, well, my parents divorced when I was 8 years old, you know, and then there was just like this quiet in the room. And I went, and? And she says, the worst thing that ever happened. I said, you're 53 years old. You were 8 years old at the time. And meanwhile, both parents had gone on to remarry and whatever. But literally, she talked about it like it took place yesterday. She had never processed it. And for her, that was her trauma. And someone else may laugh and go, oh, you know, grow a set and, you know, grow up already. I mean, come on now. You were, you know, eight years old and, you know, and they were going through stuff. But hey, everyone's totally different. And so resilience, as it turns out, you know, can't be taught. You could be taught tools of resilience. You can be. So if you think that, oh, I'm not resilient and I'm kind of, you know, such a loser and all the rest. No. That's not true at all. And especially if you have a trauma-based therapist, like Chris was describing. And so I'm just trying to give people hope out there, but I'm also giving you the eye-opener that this kind of thing that took place in your, you know, early childhood and adolescence is very common. This is not some rare occurrence or, you know, this is extremely common. I wish it wasn't. But it is, and we might as well just call it what it is. And, you know, there's a whole thing about learning how to be able to, you know, let go of some of this with some forgiveness, too. You know, it's so interesting. Abuse is a gift that keeps on giving. So, you know, if your parent was abused and they never processed it, guess what's going to happen to you? There's going to be a lot of acting out and lack of self-regulation and on, and it just keeps, you know, expanding until someone puts their foot down and says, I got to get to the bottom of this, which is, you know, what your book is all about. Would you do me a favor as we're kind of wrapping this up here a little bit? Tell us what It's Not You, It's What Happened to You, what that book's all about, because I love this book.
Well, this book was developed about 5 years ago when you and I were working with the addiction program. And part of my contract was to write this little book for the addiction services. And I decided to just write a book that explained what is trauma, what's the difference between trauma and stress, because there is a big difference, what makes up post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I took that a step further into looking at complex trauma. Let me add a little piece here that we haven't talked about. Complex trauma for some people is defined as PTSD plus, that the individual can have the symptoms of PTSD, but there's more than that because there's been, as you've been hearing us discuss, is a major impact on identity, on relationships and on emotional regulation. Also, individuals who are chronically abused are more likely to use dissociation of some sort as a defense. So I wanted to really put something out in the public domain that talked about complex trauma, and those additional things have been called disorders of self-organization. You know, we all always have to have these fancy professional terms, but they are descriptive in that there's a huge impact on oneself, one's self-worth, and on relationships, and on how you're able to manage yourself. So I put those things together, then talked about all the common after effects, and then talked about what's available these days in terms of treatment and how to get it and how to talk to therapists and what other resources are. So it's about 100 pages, and much to my surprise, it has become a very well-accepted book that a lot of clinicians found. It was put up on Amazon by the organization I was working for, and it's developed a life of its own. And I'm delighted to report that I just reissued the book a couple of weeks ago. It was off Amazon for a little bit, but it's available on Kindle for, I think, $3.99 or something like that, and in paperback for $12.99. And the feedback I'm getting has been wonderful for me because it's helpful not only to survivors, but to friends and loved ones who want to understand. And it provides, you know, in everyday language, it provides information. Plus, a lot of people get captured by the title, which was really deliberate because, again, the identity of many survivors is it's my fault. And they really get mixed up. What happened to them gets very mixed up with their identity, understandably. So having a title that says, it's not you, it is what happened to you, and you have to separate those, that's generated a lot of attention. So
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I mean, this has just been ridiculously helpful. Everyone out there, I just want you to know that we have just been just so honored to have Dr. Christine Courtois on the show. To be able to explain everything about, well, you may have experienced complex trauma and not even know it, and maybe this explains the difficulty you're having in your own life. Time to get to the bottom of it. I would really honestly say start with the book, It's Not You, It's What Happened to You, as the easiest way to get your foot in the door. If you're a professional out there who wants to step it up to the next level, then go for the big book, Treating Complex Traumatic Stress Disorders in Adults, because that has all the chapters that address everything that you're going to want to be able to do. Chris, all I can say is thank you for being on the HERB podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really very interesting, and I hope it has provided some answers and ideas for folks in the audience, both for themselves and maybe for family members and loved ones.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
and I know for a natural fact it will. And when this show goes live, we'll be spinning it out to everyone because I want everyone to be, you know, just hop on it. So again, Dr. Christine Courtois, everyone out there right now, just run on over to iTunes, rate and review the show because I want to hear from you. And that is because I am who I am. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the HERB podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD or Instagram at Pam Peek MD. Remember to catch every single episode of the HERB podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Please stay safe and stay well.